They tuck it away and run for it inside the five, and he's in for the Lions touchdown.
Barry Sanders turned around a defensive back about three times. Wow.
The guy is trying to tackle him, but he's got his back to Barry because he can't find him.
Here's a touchdown, Lions. Holy mackerel, what a run by Barry Sanders.
Detroit, there'll be a 15-yard penalty on the kickoff, but the play is not reviewable.
Welcome to another edition of the Roar of the Lions UK podcast, episode 253, Pain and Pride. My name's Matthew Turner, alongside Stephen Collins, Anthony Fitzpatrick, Ashley Soden, and the lesser seen, Ryan Farden is here too. Morning after, boys. How are you all feeling?
Crap. Plain and simple.
Tired, deflated, upset.
I'm not angry, I'm just disappointed.
I don't know how to process this yet. Like, so it's weird. I don't know whether... I just don't know how to process it.
I would say numb. Overwhelming feeling of numbness, because, like, all of the chat before this game of, it's been a great season, and it really has. And trying to reconcile a division championship and two playoff wins, which has never happened to us before, get into the championship game looking better than the PFF number one ranked team in the NFL this year. We did all of that. And it still sucks. And reconciling those two things is really difficult.
I mean, I guess at the end of the day, you're playing for one trophy. There's like this one thing you do with the NFL for, and that's to win a Super Bowl. So whether you finish with the number one overall pick or you get to the NFC championship game, it's still a failure, just a different level of failure, I guess. And getting closer, the closer you get, the more it hurts. Especially when it happens like this. Like,
yeah, they always said that, like, this is probably the worst game to lose other than the Super Bowl. And I can kind of understand why people say that now, because, you know, at least if you have the Super Bowl, you have that experience and you know, memories of it at least. And yeah, I think this is a harder game to lose than probably what the Super Bowl would have been, to be brutally honest. Yeah,
you kind of rather have given up the Tampa game, wouldn't you? And been like, you know what, let's just, that's that. You got your win. Now you've got a bit ahead of yourself and it's like, oh, God damn it. You let yourself believe.
As you said, like, but when that game was played, there was only three teams left out of 32 that could win the Super Bowl, and we were one of them. And, you know, I was totally numb last night. Like, the last 5 minutes of that game, I was just, like, gone. But, you know, I woke up this morning and that whole we had a good season feeling, it's not gone away. Like, for me, it's still been a brilliant season. We've still shown that, you know, the franchise has made a massive leap from where we were 3 years ago. And in a lot of ways, we're still like the envy of, you know, a whole bunch of people, because there's not many better coaches, there's not many better GMs. And we've probably got, I would say, one of the top 10 rosters in terms of talent.
And we've done that without mortgaging our future, which means we've got plenty of room to improve.
Plenty of cap space. And so there's still, we're not, you know, we are not on the down slope yet. We are still very much ascending. And I think next year is going to be better. So, you know, for me, it's still very, we're going to have a tough schedule next year, but I think trust in Brad. Look at what Brad's done every off season, and I think with the draft and free agency, we'll make moves again. And I'm really confident we're going to be in a better position in 3 months' time.
It's all about how you bounce back. Like this time last year, a little earlier, it's like we just missed the playoffs, and we all were quite gutted at that. Like, you know, just had that little smidge of optimism we might do it, and then it was ripped away before us from that last game, and it's like that was bad, but. You know, the team channeled it, funneled it, came back this year and took a step further. And this is the thing. It's a young side, and young sides come up against hurdles. And the one thing that gives you positivity is every time this team's been knocked down, it's stood back up again and it's gotten better every single time. So who are we to doubt that they can come back from this and get back there very quickly? It's Yeah, it's just all part of the journey. Like, ups and downs. We've been on a massive high recently, but this is another down. We just got to ride it and we'll get back up again.
Yeah, and like you say, I think like for years gone by, it was always a difficult place for free agents to come to Detroit. And I believe now with the coaching staff there, obviously there's going to be one or two changes probably with Ben Johnson going, and hopefully we can keep Hank Fraley in some way. I think people want to come here now. They've seen the what the team's built and what it's about now, and I just feel that they're the kind of Dan Campbell's the kind of coach people will say, you know what, I want a bit of that in Detroit. They're not far off, and I think we have punched a little bit above our weight this year. And overall, it's still been a fantastic season without a shadow of a doubt. Got the monkey off our back with two home playoff wins, so everything's trending
That's
in the right
huge.
direction.
That's huge.
Yeah, absolutely. This loss does kick off our off-season program, which frankly normally begins a lot earlier than this. So it's almost refreshing that that's going to start in February somehow. Coming up in this off-season, we're going to do, I think, much of what we've done in previous off-seasons. So I'll have to go through with Ant exactly what we're planning. But that has included in the past our annual award show, which we would normally do this time next week. But I think with the Super Bowl right around the corner, we might do a Super Bowl preview next week and then do an awards show the day after the Super Bowl, potentially. But that includes getting nominations from you guys for different awards, and then having fan awards as well that only you vote for. So that'll be coming down the track. Super Bowl preview next week, of course, as I said. But then we're going into the draft cycle. And, it sucks to even think about that right now. But the draft is in Detroit 12 weeks from now, just 12 and a half weeks. So we're going to be on the plane. We're going to be coming over. It's going to be a heck of a time. Going to really enjoy it. And as Steve says, the only way is up from here. Really, like, even though, we've achieved so much, it doesn't feel like we're going to get worse. So,
Yeah.
ever
Re
hopeful.
rewind 6 months, and we were all going, well, we've had a we could think this year's gonna be better, but Jameson Williams, is he a bust? Is he gonna make it? Is he gonna be the player? Two touchdowns yesterday in the NFC Championship game. Who would have thought of that 6 months? That's a massive positive because he is one of the players that's gonna bring us success in the future. So, and there's a whole bunch of those wins. So, we can stack them up. There's a lot to be thankful for.
Yeah,
Absolutely, yes.
Brad's had to build an entire roster like from scratch. This is the year where you can kind of get to those. There's only a couple of spots you really need to really go at this year, and you can do that. So first year was really always the first opportunity to really go big for a Super Bowl. So the fact you've got so close and your window's not even really opened, again, big positive.
Absolutely. Ryan McCluskey's in the house as well. Ryan, how you feeling, mate?
It's one of them things. We reaped what we sowed. So I don't have any complaints. We played ourselves. So yeah, it is what it is, unfortunately.
It is. As I say, though, this kicks off our off-season program. I'll go through the little preamble we do. There's one bit of news about the draft, and then we're going to get into talking about this game. And then, as I say, we'll get on to eulogizing the 2023-24 Detroit Lions a week or two from now. So Discord channel is going strongly. Obviously, it was a hotbed of excitement and then crushing despair yesterday, but it's going to be a great place for this off-season coming into the draft in Detroit. Please come and join us there. You'll be able to chat with us all the way through that into the 2024-25 season. So the link's in the live chat right now. Link is also in there for our merch store as well. College Football Podcast, Ant and Ryan, what are you covering this week?
Senior Bowl. So the Senior Bowl and the Shrine Bowl are both this week. We look through the Shrine Bowl roster. We've just gone. We'll be looking at the Senior Bowl this week. But yeah, big week for the draft. This is a lot of people going to be on show. You're going to be seeing a lot of clips on Twitter and X and all that sort of stuff.
All right. Don't forget to like the show, sub to the podcast, all that good stuff. You know what to do, especially in our hour of need. It helps. Just a little bit. Lions Nation Unite, don't forget to add them on their Facebook group, facebook.com/group/Lions Nation Unite. Herman Moore's project to bring the best in Lions content creators together with Twitch affiliated, YouTube monetized. There's a tip jar down below. If you like what you hear and you want to show some love, we would absolutely love that. There's a feedback form too down there. So if you want to click the link on the Google form, then you can let us know what content you'd like to see in the coming months, especially in the depths of the off season between the draft and preseason, which is a bit slow for content. So any ideas you have would be fantastic. Right, one bit of news, boys, is that this loss has locked in the Lions for the 29th pick in the first round of the 2024 NFL draft. We joked all season that it could be 32, and boy, was it close. But Baltimore losing to Kansas City locks us in at 29. If it was the other way around, we'd be picking at 30. And I don't know about you, but it's going to be strange waiting that long. I think the last time we waited that long was for Frank, potentially, at pick 20.
Yeah, Frank was pick 20. Like, I'm just looking now.
I can't remember the last time we picked in the 20s.
The last time, well, this is our highest natural pick in terms of draft order. The highest before this that we kept, as in it was our own pick, was 1992 when we picked Porsche. All the other picks that we've taken around here have been trade up and down. So look, Tomlinson in 2015, 28 was a trade back with the Broncos. Kevin Jones and Javid Best at 30 in 2004, 2010, respectively, were both trade ups back into the first with Kansas City and Minnesota. This is the highest we've ever picked.
And like, interesting fact, do you want to know who we last picked when we picked at 29? A little old guy called Chris Spielman.
Who?
Yeah, true.
Sorry.
Our last pick at pick 29 was Chris Spielman, so we're getting a linebacker, y'all.
Not another one.
No.
Hey, if you could be guaranteed a Chris Spielman linebacker at 29, you'd take him all day.
We got Jack Campbell.
Exactly.
Keep stacking them. Have three Jack Campbells. Kill everybody.
Oh, our new defensive coordinator, if Glenn goes, brings in the new 2-6 defense. Just stack all linebackers and see what happens.
Yeah. How you do it?
Right. Let's get into looking at this game. It finished Lions 31, 49ers 34. Jared Goff with one of his better games as a Lion, 25 of 41 for 273 and a touchdown. On the ground, the Lions had 182 total yards on 29 carries. David Montgomery led the team with 15 carries and 93 yards and a touchdown. Jahmyr Gibbs with 12 for 45 and a touchdown. And Jameson Williams, 1 for 42 and a touchdown. In the receiving game, we were led again by Sam Laporta, 9 of 13 for 97. Amon Ra got in on the action as well, 7 of 11 for 87. And Jameson Williams also got a receiving touchdown, 2 of 3 for 25 and a touchdown. We did, of course, lose a fumble in there. Jahmyr Gibbs on the botched handoff. San Francisco, Brock Purdy, 20 of 31 for 267, a touchdown and a pick. On the ground, Christian McCaffrey led the team with 20 carries for 90 yards and 2 touchdowns. Elijah Mitchell got the other rushing touchdown. He had 4 carries for 7 yards and a touchdown. In the receiving game, they were led by Debo, 8 of 9 for 89. Brandon Ayuk got in on the action, but was not particularly efficient. 3 of 8 for 68 and a touchdown. They recovered the fumble that I spoke of from Gibbs. That was by Arik Armstead. The pick that we had was by Malcolm Rodriguez early. On defense, we were led in tackles by Alex Anzalone with 9. We got 2 sacks, 1 by Lee McNeil, 1 shared by Melifonwu and Alualu. We had 3 tackles for a loss in there as well. No, 4 tackles for a loss. Rodriguez, Branch, Sutton, and Pascal. For San Francisco, they were led by Fred Warner with 13 tackles, 2 sacks then both by Bosa, 3 other tackles for loss, 1 by Warner, 1 by Chase Young, 1 by Javon Kinlaw. Kicking for the Lions was perfect, which is a horrible thing to say in the context of the game. Jack Fox had himself a really good day on his 2 punts with 1 absolute bomb, and Jake Moody did have a field goal miss, but otherwise got the rest of his six kicks, and Wachowski only punted once for 56 yards. Boys, on a high level, is it too easy to say this was a game of two halves and a game of momentum? Because it really feels like the Lions, in the words of Dan Campbell in his opening press conference, got knocked down and for once couldn't take a kneecap off on the way back up.
I mean, well, what it is, you know the old soccer adage over here that halftime came at the wrong time, like when the team's on top and then halftime comes and then everything. That was it. Halftime came at the wrong time. We were absolutely leveling them. And then they got a break, able to get off the field, able to watch the film, have a look, adjust, and then come back out and do to us what we did to them. And, you know, it's testament to, when you look at it, you're like, that's a team who's been there and done that. In that second half, just when the knife started turning a little bit and things started, you know, going against us, you could tell one team had been there and could deal with the pressure, and one team hadn't been there and wasn't quite sure how to deal with the pressure and started making little mistakes, whereas the others played absolutely perfect because they had to win that game. So, yeah, it was, we gave them our absolute best shot and we knocked them for six, but then they got back up and, you know, returned it in kind. It was, yeah, it was disappointing. But again, that's what experience is. One's a young team, one's a highly experienced team who's been there, and that is ultimately what decided it.
A tale of not learning our lessons. We've been terrible in the third quarter for a lot of the year. Whatever happens at halftime, it goes wrong. We come out of that half, we look cold. Like I say, we don't look warmed up. We've lost fire or anything, like I say, and that goes coaches, that goes players, whatever goes on in that locker room, it's not working and something's not right. And we've now, as a fan base collectively, when we get into the half, we've come to expect it. Now, we the third quarter, we know it's coming and we know that eventually we're gonna let ourselves down. And more often than not, this season, we have let ourselves down in the third quarter. Our offense is by far the worst in the third quarter of all of them. It's one of the worst, like, scoring, I believe, in the league. It's terrible. Like, it's just poor when it comes out of the half. And it just, yeah, it's just, it's inevitable. Like I say, but yeah, I'm going to have to find a way to overcome it. Like I say, it cannot be a growing trend through the offseason. We can't go into next season, then you see these glaring errors coming out of the half. Like, we've got to find a way to fix it.
Funny thing is, I kind of agree, but at the same time, the stats kind of don't back us up. So weirdly enough, we're not even in the top 10 worst offenses coming out the half. And basically, we're 20th with 4.2 points per third quarter, but somehow there's way worse teams, including juggernauts like Kansas City, the Chargers. They're both below us. Kansas City are 4 points per third quarter. Chargers 2.9. But yeah, it is endemic.
2.9 on at less than a field goal, yeah, and average in a quarter. Jesus Christ.
The worst two are Denver and New York. 2.6 points per third quarter this season.
That's nuts.
But I agree, it's an issue. We don't... I know halftime adjustments technically don't exist. You listen to everyone's played in the league. Nothing really happens. They all do making adjustments. But other teams are making those adjustments and putting them into motion a lot quicker than they are. We are. Like, look at 49ers. For coming to the half, they played like 90% zone. They moved to a bit more man. They started doing other things on offense, warming it up, and we couldn't catch up. And it's endemic, yeah. So that's why I know I kind of jinxed it a bit by putting the discussion at me that we had a couple of weeks ago about if Ben and Aaron go, who's going to go with them. But it's something we've got to look at, and maybe some of those people go in. We can bring in new talent, we can bring in new ideas, and it will lead to better adjustments. Like, losing Ben, if he does go, is going to hurt like hell because he's done a lot for this offense and we wouldn't have been where we are without him. But at the same time, we can't, I know some people suggested it in the comments and that we can't fire Dan and put Ben in just to try and save him, because Dan overall is more important, because he had so much win percentage with his decisions and that. Yeah, okay, we'll get onto it in a bit, the sort of decisions on the fourth downs and stuff. It came back to bite us yesterday, but for the most part, usually it comes in our favour. So I have trust that Dan can find someone to replace Ben. It might not be the same. It might take another year to sort of get the offence back to where it was, like how it was when we were bedding Ben in with Dan calling the plays and that. But I have faith we can get back to some modicum of some form of offence with it. Defence, that's the one that maybe leads to a bit more hard luck because, yeah, okay, we had a bit of unluckiness. Vildor with the deflected pass off his face mask. But for the most part, he was there for most of it. He's our best corner. Cam Sutton, we signed him as a cornerback one. People thought he scored back two. He might even be a cornerback three now. We need some adjustments on that defense. Some coaches, unfortunately, need to get their P60s and bugger off.
So I said just earlier, like, we haven't got the roster right yet. And I definitely think there's a coaching issue because the offense always goes back into its shell. It's not always in the third quarter, but it's always around the third quarter that the offense just tends to, like, you know, regress. But it, you know, there's an issue around the players, and I reckon from my point of view, 75% of our roster is exactly who we want to be there. But there's probably a quarter of the roster still isn't, and that's endemic of the fact that, you know, it takes multiple years to overhaul the roster of a team, and we're 3 years into like a full rebuild, and Holmes has done a brilliant job. But that 25% of players that isn't quite right, these are the players that are not going to win you Super Bowls. If your team is going to win a Super Bowl or an NFC Championship, your roster has to be full of straight up killers. And, you know, Reynolds dropping two passes, Vildor not taking an easy interception that, you know, he should have taken. These are the mistakes that will cost you. And I think that over the course of the next few months, we'll address a lot of those players. And someone like Reynolds, who has been really good most of the year, but at the absolute crunch time has just dropped passes and you know, he one of a few players whose mistakes have cost us the game. And that's the level that needs to be set. Like, you can't have players that go to pieces in those moments. And, like, you know, it sounds incredibly ungrateful, but it's just that the reality, you have to have players that are a clutch in those moments. And, you know, we saw plenty of players that absolutely stepped up in this game. But there's a couple that didn't and couldn't.
All right, let's get into this game. We're not going to do a huge deep dive like we do normally going through the drive summary, just going to highlight some of the key plays in the game, and then we'll get out of here. But what an incredible start for the Lions. I mean, they were beasting the 49ers on the ground, and I think it was only a four-play drive to start, which ended with the 42-yard end around to the right to Jameson Williams for the touchdown. I'm going to come to Ryan Farden first. And just, you know, we come into this game more than a touchdown underdogs, Ryan. And they didn't look like they could stop us. And, you know, a minute and a half into the game, we're 7-0 up and J-Mo turns on the Jets. It was a heck of a way to start.
Oh, it was absolutely perfect. We just absolutely ran it right down their throats, and they just, as you say, couldn't deal with us. And, you know, that was the messages I was texting Martin and just saying they can't handle this, you know, and the team was so fired up. And as you say, the consistent hot starts we've been having was just there again. And, you know, unfortunately, obviously it dropped off in the third and fourth quarter, but, you know, where, to, you know, Montgomery was getting the ball and running it down their throat. So too was Gibbs. And, you know, it was just a great start for us. But, you know, what can you say, you know?
What about the rest of you guys? It was a hell of a start with that JMO touchdown. I was saying to Ash, and I think, I can't remember who was on for the preview now, but I said to the Niners guy, you've got a problem with these end arounds, don't you? And it just seemed so prophetic. I was properly on my high horse after that.
Yes, you should be. We were on fire in that first drive, predicting the plays. maybe, as I said, it's because we've seen it, we know our tells, and obviously the 49ers didn't pick up in terms of the second half, but that, yeah, that's his first drive. What a way to set the tone. They probably expected us to be like, okay, we're going to have to shoot out here, we're going to pass the ball. No, we preyed on their bad run defense and just ran, pass, run. And just what a play, as we said, sort of end around getting Jamo on his things. And I remember reading it out on from Next Gen Stats. Jamo had a 0.5% chance of scoring on that play. 0.5%, and we did it. Those are the margins of error we had in that first drive, and it worked. And we just put them in a bit of shock, because you could see at that point already some of their players were getting a bit shook by it. Shanahan was looking a bit glum on the sideline, though. That might just be his resting bitch face. Like, he might just look like that all the time. He's a bit gormless, isn't he? As Matt quite rightly put yesterday. But we set out on the right foot, and it was good to see.
I mean, talking about tone setting, David Montgomery, like, not even drew the most attention in free agency last year. Like, someone that I was very kind of like, meh, you know, about him coming to Detroit. And the guy has been absolutely awesome for us all season. He is more than happy to pound the rock, but my God, can he make people miss tackles and find extra yards, and totally set the tone in the first quarter with how he was running the ball. And if, you know, if we can make another couple of pickups as good as Montgomery in free agency, it's going to be a great season next year, because he shows exactly what, you know, adding like a key chess piece to an offense can do for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just kind of getting to that point, the Lions stout on defense in the first drive, San Francisco go 12 plays, 45 yards, and miss a field goal by Jake Moody. And then the Lions come back firing the second drive. I mean, good field position set up by the missed field goal, but just progressing down the field, a long, slow drive this time compared to the first one. Monty punches in a one-yarder for a touchdown. San Francisco looked all at sea. Or maybe it wasn't even they looked all at sea. We were putting them there.
Bully ball. Like, I don't think they expected us to come out with such ferocity. It's like, you've seen it, our team a lot of times, we'll go three and out, takes a little bit for us to get going. Not this time. We sort of just shot out a cannon, took them aback. They looked like they were having trouble adjusting to it. And the offensive line just played absolutely superb. Like, even Nawashika, who's had to come in at the last minute, the guys were executing their blocks really well. Everyone was executing their assignments perfectly in the run game. The running backs were running hard, getting yards after contact, just absolutely beating them at what they're good at. That's what they do to teams. And, you know, teams that do that, they don't like it when a team sort of, you know, turns the tables and does it to them. And, you know, just at all levels, we were getting the blocks in, we were getting the yardage in. And like I said, we were just scoring. That's what you got to do against teams like that. You got to score, put the scoreboard pressure on. And I loved it. Like, just stay true to who you are. We are a nice, flashy team with some great playmakers, but we went to our bread and butter, which is running the ball physically with all our guys contributing, coming up with good concepts for it. It was lovely stuff. And getting Jamo involved early was so good as well, because Jamo's our difference maker. And when you give him the ball early and he starts making plays, then the defense starts getting worried, because they're like, all right, they're going to be using him today. And we did target him a lot more than usual. And it makes them think twice about, you know, they've got to lighten the box against us, which helps a little bit. So I love the first two drives. I thought they were amazing. And, you know, it was just, we couldn't have asked for a better start. We're in dreamland at this point.
Ryan McCluskey, I mean, 14-0 up after the first quarter, and I know that they missed the field goal, but it wasn't a great drive by their standards, I don't think. You know, the most explosive offense in the NFL going at 4 yards per play to end in a Jake Moody missed field goal. And I mean, we all knew that Moody had had his troubles recently. That felt like it could have been the start of something really bad for him in this game. Unfortunately for us, he was money down the stretch.
Yeah, he's still a bum. It was a terrible draft pick. But for me, the thing we had to come out and straight away and do what was, we had to chop down CMC. Like I say, we had to be stout in the middle, because they want to do the same thing as us. They have to soften up a defense by using the probably offensive player of the year. like you say, he gets a wild, sometimes get up going, but he's hard to bring down. He's physical, low centre of gravity. But the boys in the middle, like I say, the guys, Jack and Alex, they made life really hard for him that first half. Like you say, he was getting close to like breaking away, but he was getting ankle tapped. He was getting tripped up, like the odd like shoelace. Like he just wasn't getting anything. Mm. Like I said, he didn't come close to ripping off a big play for the large majority of the half. So yeah, we did a good job of stopping down. And then with the pass, like I say, Purdy, he was okay, dink and dunk him, but like I say, that we were getting the Hutch started big, like two or three batted balls, like getting in the passing lanes. Don't have to get there, just be there, make yourself big, frustrate him. Like I say, a few of them could have been interceptions. They fell and like there was just no one around him. So yeah, they were disrupting their rhythm and everything they wanted to do. So defensively, it was pretty much spot on for most of the first half.
Going into the second quarter then, and San Francisco came back and scored their first points. Big throw to Juszczyk for 23 yards over the middle. No idea how he got for free. And then a pass to CMC short. He went for 28, basically all yak. And then a two-yard rush by him for the touchdown. Didn't really get anywhere near stopping him. And pretty much every short yardage situation at the goal line, we had trouble stopping McCaffrey. That made it 14-7. And then a really nice set by San Francisco. So we drove down to about midfield, looked like we were going to score again. Really nice design on a fake blitz by San Francisco. So the linebacker looks like he's coming down, which forces Sewell to try and go out and block the linebacker. And Bosa just now is unblocked with Jahmyr Gibbs needing to pick him up, who didn't, which just left Bosa free to sack Goff. It didn't result in too much of the loss of yards, but it did just mean the drive stalled out. But we punted to the 12. And then we put Purdy under massive pressure in the next drive. And a few plays in, Pascal gets his hand up, hits Purdy's throwing arm at the end of his motion. And Malcolm Rodriguez is just there for a fairly simple pick and return. Unfortunately, set back a little bit by a block in the back. But Steve, you know, they get some points on the board and then we end up punting away. They've got the ball thinking they can get level and suddenly great field position again. I mean, we were getting some pressure on Purdy.
Yeah, and I think I think that's where the game kind of got away in the second half, because all of a sudden those pressures and those kind of like sacks that we just seem to miss by like millimeters, whereas in the first half and in that second quarter, like Purdy was, as you said, he was dinking and dunking and he didn't really seem to have much of an answer. And I think our pass protection was, our pass coverage was pretty good. But like I said, it's just the odd slip up, and we've talked about Sutton. I'm sure we're going to talk about Vildor, and it's just those little mistakes that just let them like slowly back into the game.
Anyone else want to chat about this period of the game, or should I go on to the half?
I feel bad being proved right, because, well, first thing is, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, I can't wait. Just get that dickhead out of Detroit. I can't stand the guy. All right. The penalty, he looked for Debo because he don't like him. And like you say, he hit him in the shoulder knowing that he thought it was fractured. Like he purposely went after him because he's a tosser. And he showed his true colours in this game. So I'll be delighted when he's not re-signed. Because that won't call. But yeah, like I say, a lot of whiff tackles. Oof, like I say that. Like the CMC 20-yard play, it should have been stopped for like 6 yards. And literally, I say, it's just so frustrating. Like we see the flaws are coming in now. Like I said, they're there in the position. They're not breaking down, or they're trying to go too high, too low. And it's, yeah, a lot of it's poor technique. Tackle, like saying, it was frustrating. But yeah, in the end, we come over the interception. Like I say, we get some pressure. But yeah, we've let them off the hook a little bit here.
It was the Cam Sutton play, wasn't it, on CMC where he didn't get him? Yeah, sorry, Amp.
I was about to say, you know, just about this, a lot of love has to be given to Malcolm in this regard. especially in this period, because before he kicked the field goal, he made two tackles on that set of drives, especially the third down. He was the one who stopped the drive dead. And then he gets the pick as well. But, you know, as a guy who's had an incredible, for a fifth round pick, a really good rookie season, was asked a lot of him. And then his second year, he's had to sit and sit and sit and wait and do his graft on special teams and not really get much of a look in. For him to come in when D-Bar got injured and to just be there around making plays, that's just indicative of who he is as a guy. He's like, he's got a place on this roster for a long time as part of that room. And for him to come in and make the plays he did, I think he deserves a lot of credit for that, because would have been easy, been so cold, not having much action in there to come in. Maybe when all the senior guys around him are making mistakes, not tackling properly, he's the guy who's leading by example. So he needs a lot of credit for that part period of the game.
Does anyone know how bad Barnes' knee injury is? Because it was, I think it was on the sixth or seventh defensive play he did it.
I haven't seen much, but I know quite a lot of people saying it looked very similar to Sam Laporta's injury that he had on his knee, the same kind of mechanism. So probably the same. So we'll probably find out. Dan will probably, actually, no, he won't have to now because we won't have injury updates. We won't know till probably the until training camp. That's the unfortunate, unless he puts it out himself there. We won't know till training camp, probably, which is sad.
I hope it's not too bad, because as good point, and like, Rodriguez came in and, you know, did a brilliant job. I think with CJ, it's that classic thing where a player's rushed back from injury and he's really pushed himself, and it kind of feels like he's left everything on the treatment table, getting ready to get back in the game, but he just doesn't seem to have any juice, and he's probably just come back too early.
Yeah, well, that, and I love the signing when it happens, because we all know I love my hybrid slot safety guys. It just hasn't been there. Like, I look again in training camp, he had the personality. It's like, you know what, this is the kind of person we need in the back end. We've got Tracy, who's sort of, I don't want to say he's mild and meek, because God, when he tackles, he looks like a missile sometimes, but CJ was supposed to bring a sort of roughness to the back end. Obviously, he missed quite a lot of the season with a peck injury, but not like this. He's supposed to wind the other players up so they make the stupid mistakes, not that. So yeah, I'm with Rye. Don't bring him back. He's got to go. So if he wants to go ring chase, then go do that. Do whatever. We've got three. Well, we've got two safeties we can trust now, with Iffy and Kirby. Could play them for most of the snaps. It shouldn't be hard to find a rotational safety to go behind them to do special teams and that. Hell, as I hate to say it, because it's adding yet another thing to the draft. Day three safety is not off the question now, and there's quite a few there that we'll get onto in the next couple of weeks. So thank you for the tiny bits of service you gave us, CJ, your two picks, especially last week against Tampa, but it's time to go find another home now, unfortunately. Maybe if Glenn goes somewhere else, you can go follow him and do your shit there, because I don't think you're going to be sticking around in Detroit much longer.
Yeah, I mean, I think I said it to you during the coverage, and I don't know whether the rest have the power to do this. I assume they must. But, like, it wasn't just him trying to hit a guy he doesn't like. It was a dirty, cheap shot. Like, in basketball, it'd be a flagrant one or flagrant two or whatever the designation is. But potentially, I think I said to you, I'd eject him.
Yeah, you did. You literally did, yeah.
Because at the end of the day, hitting someone in a legitimate play is probably just as hard, but hitting them off the play, nowhere near it, just to hit them. And then, like, I think what annoyed me more was, like, the sale job of it was, like, properly hitting him, but, like that. And it's like, you see footballers do it all the time. Well, I haven't tripped him up because my arms are in the air. And it's like, you're not fooling anyone, son. Like, just annoyed the shit out of me. Anyway, going to come to the end of the half here. So obviously the Lions 14-7 get the pick in good field position and proceed down the field. It's finished off by Jahmyr Gibbs with a spectacular 15-yard outside run for a touchdown. Kind of runs up the gut, sees Randy Gregory crashing down from the edge, and just a little hop step gets outside him and beats everyone to the corner. Fantastic play. Maybe it's one good play of the game. It wasn't Gibby's best day, unfortunately, but PAT was good after that and 21-7. And, you know, you think you're in dreamland up 14, and then we force them to go three and out. incredible. So we get the ball back with 4 minutes to go. You know, we give them the ball back with 5 minutes to go, thinking they can go 2-for-1 and take the lead. And suddenly we've got the chance to make it a 3-score game. And we do, final possession of the half. And we see about 7 plays of 6 offensive linemen in the game. It was great to watch. There was another Boza sack in there as well, which put us back. But 3rd and 18, it's no problem for the Lions, because Amon-Ra St. Brown, for the second time in consecutive games, catches it 2 yards short of the sticks and manages to get 3 yards of yak. I mean, incredible play by him. Got down to 4th and goal from the 3 with seconds remaining and decided to take the field goal rather than go for it, in difference to what we did in the remainder of the game. But that did make it a 3-score lead at 24-7. Come back to Ryan Farden now. After the pick, mate, and then we go and have that Gibbs run, force him 3 and out, and then we go and get another 3 to make it 17. I don't know what you thought about the 4th down decision on that specific moment, but it kind of felt like we couldn't do any wrong. Even when Boza was getting a sack, we were still converting for a 1st down.
Yeah, I think like that field goal that they ended up taking, I think the drive was like a good 15, 16 plays drive. So, you know, we obviously had the ball for a long time. A lot of our drives, I think, were, you know, obviously converted from long distances. You know, there's a good few 3rd downs, like, you know, in there as well. So, you know, they could not stop us, you know, and you felt the fear from everyone in San Francisco's side of the field. You know, like you said earlier, Shanahan's face just was like, what is going on here? This wasn't in the script. And, you know, I personally was okay with going with the field goal. Obviously, you're going in with you know, one hell of a lead, which you could have only dreamed of before the game. So, you know, everything was going to plan, basically. You know, yeah, if we had gone for it, would they have stopped it? Well, hindsight now, you never know. But I was half expecting him to go for it, to be honest with you, because I thought that that was just going to be another major dagger in there for him. And, the difference in the points at that time, even if we didn't get it, was quite big. So, you know, maybe with them getting the ball back to start the second half played into the decision-making of going for the 3 points there. But, you know, we obviously could have gone for it and maybe sewn it up a bit more, but unfortunately didn't go for it.
And, you know, another great set of drives in the end of this first half. I mean, we really put the dagger in them and they should have been dead and buried. Do you think the 4th down decision was good as well?
Yeah, I thought it was really good. I mean, given the circumstance, I mean, I thought we did really well. I don't think we could have had much of a better first half. Like, the most important thing when you get the turnover, get points. We did. We got a touchdown. You then send them 3 and out again. And the clock management from us was terrific. I mean, there were some tremendous plays on that drive. Like, Amon-Ra converted, what was it, 3rd and 18. Jameer converted 3rd and 12 or whatever it was. And, you know, to be able to get it all the way down there, I agree with Dan. 4th and 3, just be sensible. You've dominated the half. There's no need to go into the half without points. Take a field goal, put points on. You've played a perfect half, basically. Like, that was a perfect half of football. I don't mind being a little conservative towards the end of it. It's great. You've got a 17-point lead at the half. You couldn't have done much more. So it was just utter domination. I don't think I've seen San Francisco manhandled like that over a half this year. They've lost games, but they've never had their ass decisively kicked like that for 30 minutes. And no,
in complete difference to the Baltimore game, where they did get blown away eventually, because yeah, everything there was self-inflicted, whereas yeah, we just hammered them.
Yeah, and we beat them at their own game, like trench warfare. Like, even on both sides of the ball, our trenches were better. And we were just doing everything we needed to. We established the momentum and we railed up 24 points on that. That should be more than enough to win a game. So, you know, that first half was, I don't have any really critique about it. I thought we were tremendous. Did everything we needed to. Finish it with points. Good job.
Does anyone think that we should have gone for it on 4th down in that spot from the 3-yard line?
Mm-hmm.
No, we're all in agreement. Okay, I think that speaks volumes. Sorry.
One person did. Ben, because I've got it up, because, you know, Ben Baldwin's bot, it said to go for it. 4.4% win percentage, supposedly. yes, wow. I don't believe it because somehow the win percentage of us making the field goal is the same as us failing on the fourth down conversion. So maybe it's a bit broken, but you suppose according to Ben Baldwin, going for it would give us 84% win percentage. The field goal gave us 79%. But yeah, I'm happy. It's one of those, wasn't it, against the Rams where it was like, where the decision of them kneeling it out. It's just with the game script, it's so close to the half. You have to take the point, give them an extra three instead of you potentially getting stopped. Because if it was 4th and 1, maybe, because we're showing consistency in converting those. But 4th and 3, it's 2 yards too many for me. So yeah, I'm kicking the field goal.
All right, moving into the second half. And I mean, it didn't change for a while. It's not like it all went to pot straight away. The Lions continued to play well in the first half of the third quarter. But eventually San Francisco warmed up, especially Deebo Samuel had catches of 26 and 9 yards on a drive. And we actually held them to a 43-yard field goal, which this time was good by Jake Moody. But it felt like a massive win, that possession for the Lions, because 24-10, and now you're getting the ball up 14 points. It was absolutely perfect, really, considering the situation. And the Lions drive all the way down to the San Francisco 28. So you go back 17 yards for the kick, so it makes it a theoretical 45-yarder. But the Lions do go for it on 4th and 2. And Goff is under a little bit of pressure, has to step up in the pocket, but delivers a ball which Reynolds can and perhaps should catch. It's not exactly in the bread basket either, and it is with Goff moving, which changes the angles, but I think it's not unfair to say it's a play you expect them to make. That causes a turnover on downs, and San Francisco take over at that spot at their own 28, and they absolutely punish us, but in the worst way possible. Brandon Ayuk with a 51-yard catch down at the far 4-yard line, and even after a loss on the next play, Ayuk with a touchdown reception from 6 yards out makes it 24-17 after the PAT. And the turnaround was complete after a fumble on a botched handoff between Goff and Gibbs. And, you know, so they take over at our 25 or so. And a Purdy 21-yard scramble gets them within 5, and CMC punches it in from 1 yard. And it's 24-24 in a blink of an eye. Steve-O, 4th and 2, obviously we need to talk about. I mean, the holding them to a field goal felt like a massive win. I hope everyone feels the same on that, and I'm not just speaking alone.
Absolutely. But
4th and 2, 45-yarder. You've got a career field goal kicker from 45 yards at about 70%. So it's a 2.1-point expectation on a field goal, shall we say. Decide to go for it. Do you like this decision? Do you like the play call? We've got the Vildor helmet catch. Then we've got the botched handoff and then the Purdy scramble. Like, everything bad. So just give us some thoughts on everything that happened.
So for me, I was expecting the 49ers to come out and score a touchdown in their first drive. I mean, that's what you've got to expect from the number one seed. So for us to hold them to 3 points, massive for us. So I was pleased with that. And then we're in a situation where we need a 4th and 2, and Campbell calls to go for it. And again, after them just putting 3 points on the board, the chance to keep this drive alive and score a touchdown and increase the lead, I mean, that's kind of almost game over at that point. So for me, I'm more than happy for the 4th and 2, but Reynolds should have caught it. It was a pretty straightforward catch. Like, you know, said, oh, well, Goff was slightly, you know, moving slightly. And a wide receiver should be able to make that catch. A premium wide receiver should easily be able to catch that. And Reynolds dropped it. And that was the first really big misstep of the game. And it was just unfortunate that then, you know, Purdy's been dinking and dunking all day, and he finally airs one out. And it was an awful throw. It was way in front of Ayuk. Ayuk was nowhere near it. And Vildor was perfectly placed to just take the pick. And it made a terrible, terrible error. Yeah, you know, like those situations, going up against someone like Ayuk and you're absolutely at the stretch of your physical capabilities, it's a tough play. But it's one that if Vildor wants to be a cornerback one or a cornerback two or even a cornerback three in the NFL, in the playoffs, he's got to make that pick. And he didn't. And those two things for me, which then, and you could feel the momentum shift. And when Gibbs went into that stack of bodies and then there was the big scramble for the ball, I wasn't surprised. I just wasn't, because I felt the seeds had been sown in the last 2 minutes.
Ryan Farden, sum it up, mate. It went to pot.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for me, the main killer was definitely the botched handoff. I mean, once that happened, you felt, oh no, this is definitely going against us now. You know, the tide's completely turned. We're on the ropes here, and it was just brutal to watch. It was honestly like a horror film. It's giving me nightmares thinking about it. I agree with the Vildor comments. He's got to get that. Yeah, you have to get that. And you know, and then once after that, then Purdy's running around the place and we couldn't stop him. And it's just like, what is going on here? You know, we're gone. You know, it was like a boxing fight where you're winning for like the majority of the fight and then you just take him on right on the chin and the ref's going to give you a standing eight count. And it was horrific. It was really, really horrific. And you know, I don't know, like, if it's what we could do here, if you could just maybe, if it was worth burning the timeout to try and get them in together or faking an injury and just try and whip them back into shape or something, because they were just all over the gaff. They really were. And it cost us the game. That period of the game, they've 8 minutes, changed it completely. So, and that's what gave San Francisco the win in the end.
Go to Ryan McCluskey here. I mean, it's one of those things, isn't it? But even after the helmet catch and everything that happened there, the Lions are up 7 with an offense which has really hummed up to this point. So score again and you're up 10, 14 points. Like, even after that and the momentum potentially shifting, the Lions of a month ago probably just marched down the field, but something just changed in the mentality.
It was the whole thing was just weird. Like, first of all, we ride our luck because Barton had set up for a field goal. He should have made a field goal because James Houston nails Purdy in the head. It was a very flagrant roughing the passer call that was clearly missed. So they set up for a field goal. We ride our luck. I'll take that. Like I say, I'm all right with it. Vildor, well, I'm pretty sure it wouldn't have been an interception anyway. There was a flag on the play, and I'm pretty sure it was going to be pass interference or holding. They picked it up once it bobbled and caught, so I'm pretty sure they were going to have the ball anyway at the goal line. So it was a frustrating set of events. And then, let's say Gibbs, Goff, 50-50, I don't know if it's a fault. Gibbs goes with the wrong hand, and Goff steps across him, let's say, gets in his way. They both make a complete fuck-up of it. Like I say, he's never even got the ball. And like I say, when the 49ers recovered it, I fully expected them to have the ball. I thought there's no way on earth we're going to be lucky enough to come up with that because we never get those. And for me personally, I thought there and then, like I say, when they punch it in, I knew we were losing. I'd already accepted it. I was like, well, we've made a fucking right hash of this. Personally, I say it was one of those. And yeah, like the offense we've got, in the last couple of weeks, like I say, at times we've just shaken it off. But this time, like I say, they've adjusted because they've gone from having like 5 down linemen and like 2 safeties to basically having 6, and they've got 3 guys in the box, and they know we want to run the ball. And it was basically impossible from that moment then for us to run the ball. And we still did it anyway, consistently. And nearly every one of them got fucking stuffed. And that was one of those where you think, like, Ben, like, you're going to have a job interview in 2 days. Like, you know, Jambo, you know that guy, you know that end-around thing that you didn't do again from, like, the first drive? You never did it again because we've had a habit of all year of just fucking wasting him completely half the time, which is just really annoying. Like, mix it up a bit. But, yeah. And Reynolds, yeah, not the best throw, but, yeah, catch it. unacceptable. Catch the ball for both of his. You catch it. They're not great. They're away from the body, but I don't give a shit. You want to get re-signed, you catch those balls. Like, those are the money winners. So yeah, it couldn't have been any more frustrating as 8 minutes. And I agree, yeah, turned the complete tide. The stadium turned, the fans realised it turned, and they ramped it up. And it felt like we were level, but it felt like we were like two scores down. That's how it felt. Like, all the energy had been sucked out of us, and it was going to be a uphill battle from there.
Ash, have you got anything to add on this period of play?
Yeah, so it was just on that bird, the roughing the passer, because I saw a tweet from Football Zebras about it earlier, and they say it wasn't. So I'm going to literally read what they say word for word. I'm not going to contradict what Dean said on TV. So obviously, Dean Blandino saying it should have been roughing the passer. But initial contact is with the hands, which enters into the interpretation of forcible / incidental. The rolling across the helmet by itself is not a foul. With one full speed look, there was enough for Blakeman to justify no flag. So I think it wasn't roughing the passer. It was fine. Kind of like with the Rams, with the whole Aline thing, it's incidental, nothing really there. So it could be flagged, but it also could not be flagged. It's up to the referee's interpretation. And according to Football Zebras, they got it right. But yeah, it's just an interesting thing about this period with us. Obviously, all the going for it is you listen to Dan's press conference afterwards, and he quotes the exact things that people try to use against analytics. Does not mention analytics once. It's all about, I thought, yeah, attrition, my guys, all this stuff that people use against analytics, yet he's being ripped into it. He's a no-win situation either. He says, oh, yeah, the analytics say it. It's like, oh, analytics, lol, this is why you don't do it. Says the exact things that go against analytics, and he's still getting ripped into it. It was the right decisions on the players to execute, and yeah, it felt a bit like, I hate trading it back up because it's a game from last year, but that fourth down conversion against the Bills on Thanksgiving, it was that kind of moment. You remember that, where like, and it was Chark instead of Reynolds, admittedly, but throwing the put up past the Chark seemed pretty catchable. He doesn't get it. Bills march down the field, score a field goal, win the game. It was that kind of turning point, and it just snowballed on. And it was 10 minutes of real time. 10 minutes of real time, and people can go back on the live stream of us and just see me break down. I go from all happy to suddenly I'm back in my chair like this, resigned to my fate. I knew then.
If I'm completely honest, I jokingly call Michael the money badger. I don't fucking trust the guy as far as I can throw him.
Yeah.
No.
I don't trust him in that position whatsoever. I'm not giving him that kick from like 47. I'd really expect him to fuck it up, to be honest. 75% like percentage kickoff. Oh yeah, across the area. That's not good. He's just not like, he's like a mid-level kicker, and that kind of pressure.
He would a million percent miss that kick, definitely.
And that's the critical thing to take away from this. Like, that first fourth down, Dan made the right call. Like, I don't want to hear anything about this. It was Josh Reynolds who screwed out completely. And at this point in the game, you're saying, well, you have a field goal to respond to them. If you want to go to a Super Bowl, you've got to go all in. None of this pussyfooting around, you know, trying to take three here, trying to... We wouldn't even be here on this pod right now in this particular episode if he'd not been aggressive in the playoffs. We'd have lost the Rams game. We might have lost the Bucks game. We wouldn't even be here. He makes the right call. The player screws up. It's all on Josh Reynolds, nobody else. Goff, that is, you know, the 49ers receivers would have made that. They'd have caught that. Like, I'm afraid this is a tough business. He's been a great, steady set of hands for us. But when it really mattered, he coughed it up big time. Dan did not make a mistake there. And when you convert that, if you do, you go on, either you're taking more time off the clock, so that third quarter just never happens, and you extend that play more, and you can still get 3 points if you screw up, or you can get another touchdown. You get another touchdown there, they're dead, they're buried. The player screwed up, not Dan. And then afterwards, it's just a big cataclysmic event, set of events where, like, the helmet bounce is a 1 in 1,000 thing. Like, it's a 1 in 1,000 thing that happens, and it's just little bits like that, and then the momentum goes and it just tidal waves against you. And we saw in the first half, we had the momentum. Nothing went right for the 49ers. No one's bitching about that because it happens. It's about how quick you can get out that funk and just sort of unlucky things kept happening, which stopped us getting out that funk. But yeah, Dan is not to blame for that at all.
And I don't want to pile onto the money budget even more, but again, one of my stats. The Lions were 75%, so 15 of 20, at converting 4th and 3 and fewer in the regular season, plus 2 of 2 in the postseason. Michael Badgley is 9 of 20, so 45% in his career from 48-plus yards, which is the worst among high-volume kickers in NFL history.
Yeah.
Says it all.
When I like to say, I was lucky enough to go to quite a few games this year, and when I saw him, and it, to be fair, when I saw Riley Patterson in the warm-ups, I think I messaged you guys a couple of times, go, this guy can't kick it from 140 yards. I go, he is pony, to be brutally honest with you. I mean, he's got to be one of the worst in the league. He's got to be in the top, bottom few. So that's a big thing to get adjusted for next year, because, you know, definitely have to have a strong kicker anyway. But it's just madness. Like, you know, I was just thinking when you were talking about with that helmet catch, and in these big level games, like, you know, even in the Super Bowl, a David Tyree catch and stuff like that, you know, the Edelman catch in the Falcons Patriots game, it always seems to, when it happens for that team, it always seems that they go on to win it or something like that. It's just like, it's something. It's like it's scripted to happen that way. It's just insane the way that it fortunately goes for them, and they seem to always feed off of it and find a way to end up winning the game. But just crazy, just absolutely crazy.
The only thing I'll say on this passage of play, apart from saying it was absolutely the right decision on fourth down, regardless of the kicker, for me, like I still think it's the right choice. We're just so good at drawing up a really good play to get those yards, and as Ant said, the time off the clock is basically the most important thing there. It's huge. If we can continue to get at least 3, but we take as much time off the clock as possible, we win the game. So ending the drive there with only 3 or with a 45% chance of 3 is not exactly winning football. But the Kendall Vildor helmet thing, watching the play back and actually watching it live, it's a fantastic play by Vildor. Now, it hits him in the helmet. Yes, okay, fine. Maybe he should be catching it. The flag is Cleet Blakeman covering his ass in case he doesn't catch it, which I really, really hate, because they end up picking up because he's caught it. But if you actually have a look at the play in terms of what happens in the route, the throw is good. The throw is really good because it's absolutely on time for Ayuk to get it. And Vildor puts himself in between where the ball is going to go and where Ayuk is, and ends up boxing him out like a basketball player. Like, he disrupts the timing of the route without interfering with Ayuk, and he puts himself in position to be the only person to make the catch. At the very worst, it should just be an incompletion. And the only reason that happens is because his technique is perfect. Now, he's a cornerback, because he's shit at catching the ball. Otherwise, he'd be a wide receiver, right? Like, yes, ideally, he'd be making the pick there. But really, what you want from your cornerbacks is upside to make the pick, but actually just make sure it's incomplete most of the time. And he absolutely did that. I think that's one of the best plays I've seen from a cornerback for us this season. It just worked out really badly for us in terms of how it ended the game. But I thought it was brilliant.
I massively disagree. Like, cornerbacks are there to pick interceptions. That's what their job is. Like,
but they're all really bad at it. Almost all of them in the league.
Like, the throw was slightly... The throw was slightly in front of Ayuk. The throw was right into Vildor's lap. And I've seen, like, slow-mo picture of him in that position, twisting his body around. It's there. It's there to be caught. And it goes to his hands and hits him on the visor. Like, you can't defend the player there. Like, he absolutely should have picked that. That's what cornerbacks are there to do, make plays.
So why aren't we ripping into Sutton for missing the one in the first 49ers drive? He had pretty much the exact same situation, except for instead of coming off his face mask, it went incomplete. Kill Vildor, for me, I'm kind of in the middle. So I think Vildor made a decent play. He was getting his head around to get the ball, and he just mistimed it, and it's a one in a million chance that it goes off his helmet and it gets caught. It's not a great play, because obviously you just say, yeah, if it was a great play, he'd have come down with the interception, made a great play, and that's why people on Twitter at that point were like, why is Kendall Wilder on the field for the Lions? And you have to explain, he's our best cornerback. But that says it all when he's our best cornerback and all he can do is make good plays on the ball that are like, he's in phase, he's there, but he just can't get his head round enough in time. I said it on Discord. He's basically a slightly higher level Levin Lawson. Like, you remember Levin Lawson? He would always be there for the ball, could never get his head round in time. He's basically that, except for he can actually tackle and make some plays in run defense. And it if it goes back another time, it's probably, it goes incomplete. It's just a freak incident where one in a million, it goes their way and it just kills all momentum for us.
I mean, Cam Sutton's kind of been public enemy number one on here for at least the last 6 weeks now. So I don't think anyone's letting him off with anything. He's shite at this point and we know it. He's not worth his contract. And hell, I'd be looking at a way to get out of it next year. I'd just redo that entire goddamn room next year. Hell, I'd keep Vindle. I'd keep Vindle here. Let him be in the rotation, but you set everybody else outside of that. And you let him go because, yeah, his performance was disgusting, but it's been disgusting for 6 weeks, so it's kind of moot point at this point.
I wonder if Pittsburgh were taken back for a seventh fight with J.C. Jackson and charges to Pats.
I'm quite happy for Sutton to be CB3 and Vildor CB4, but we need a CB1 and a CB2.
I would flip the two of them, personally. I know that we talked about this before, but I just think the Vildor's more physically talented in terms of speed, height, weight, and also play recognition. Like, he just seems to understand a bit more about how football works. He seems to be in the right place more often than Cam does. I don't know. It's an argument in terms of roster stuff for another time, perhaps. Let's pick this up and go to the end. 24-24 tie. Lions with a chance with the ball to go ahead, but Lions go 3 and out and didn't really seem to get any play. Like Ryan McCluskey said, just seemed to kind of run the ball into a brick wall at this point. They were flying around the field. And then San Francisco come back with a drive, but they don't exactly finish it off. Lions defense keeping us in the game. Big 28-yard pass to Kittle. Purdy gets a 10-yard scramble, but then back-to-back sacks when they look like they're going to score. One share between Alo-Alo and Ify, and another by Liam McNeil. We force them into a 33-yard field goal, which is good. And it's a 3-point game. And again, the Lions on offense have a chance to take the lead. And we get down to the San Francisco 30, which would have been a 47, 48-yard attempt. It's 4th and 3. We go for it again. Under pressure, Goff forced out to his right. Tries to throw for Amon-Ra St. Brown, who is free. But it's going to be a heck of a throw if it's made. Like, it's a low percentage look. And the play call, unfortunately, just didn't work for the defense that were running because they misread what's happening, which is a shame. I'm not sure they used any motion in the play, so they maybe didn't identify what the coverage was beforehand, which is a shame because obviously we do a lot of that and that helps Goff. And we didn't help him out, but it happens. Anyway, turnover on downs, 3 points down, and now finally, the 49ers really put the Lions out of their misery. Purdy with a 21-yard scramble on 3rd and 4. CMC with a 25-yard rush. And Mitchell punches it in from 3 yards out for 34-24. 3 minutes left, needing a quick score. And the Lions go 11 plays for 75 yards and a touchdown. It was effective but slow. 3rd and goal from the 1. They call inside zone to Monty. And it didn't work. Lions took a timeout, which was tactically incorrect. Should have just let the clock run. That then means that onside kick is the only way you get there. On 4th and goal, as a result from the 3, fantastic catch by Jameson Williams. Like, maybe his best of the season. Just zipped in there, bit of a circus grab. Made it 34-31. And to be fair to Badgley, it's a good onside kick. We just get there a yard early and we don't catch it, but it gave us a chance, and but it didn't work, and San Francisco managed to kneel it out, which is a real shame. I don't know who has spoken the least recently, so I'll just come back to Ryan Farden and just say, even at 24-24 and the offense not firing, the defense kept us in it for a little bit. And, you know, we still had several chances there. And then eventually we do put points up on the board, but just a couple of situational mistakes in there.
Yeah, I didn't. Yeah, the fourth down play, I wasn't a big fan of that personally. I was surprised that in a way, if you, yeah, I thought it was probably set up perfectly for the run there, but you know, obviously they didn't decide to go for it in that way. But you know, just it was so frustrating. You just felt it wasn't gonna, we weren't gonna connect on that fourth down. And then, you know, obviously, like you say, taking a timeout in that drive where we had to go for the onside kick, that was a big killer for us, obviously, as well. So, you know, it's just frustration throughout, you know, those last few drives for both teams where we had them, you know, third and four, and then, like you say, took off for a 21-yard run. You know, you just couldn't get the vital stops at the vital times, and it was enough to, you know, put us out of the game, basically, from there. So, yeah. Not much really to add to that.
Boys, defense stood up, actually, you know, for a large portion of this half when things were going against us. And, you know, two drives in there and, you know, that they still held them. We were only 3 points down before eventually they breached our defenses.
They did, but it all just kind of felt really ominous at this point. I think from like the Gibbs fumble, it felt like, you know, San Fran had put their hands on our shoulders, kneed us in the nads, and we were unable to recover from it. It was just, they had the wind knocked out of them, and no one made the play we needed to be able to get back into this. Defense couldn't force it. They had stops, but they couldn't force turnovers, and the offense just couldn't get any semblance of anything going, which was a shame, because after the first half, we just absolutely ran all over them. But when they stop you running the ball, it then becomes very difficult, because then that pass rush can get at you, and they're a very aggressive defense, and they were tackling well. They were sort of doing the opposite of what we were doing, and the momentum just got shot. And then you're down 10 and you're like, well, it's going to be garbage time. You know, hopefully we can get something back. We did. And you know what? I'm going to, you know, we didn't need to be in the situation where we had to burn that time out and, you know, have to do the onside kick. And this hasn't been mentioned much, but Anthony Ferkster should have scored a touchdown before that. I was actually quite disappointed with him that he put in a lack of effort to get in the end zone, because if that was Sam Laporta, Brock Wright, hell, even James Mitchell, they'd have powered their way over there. He limply let himself get hit out at the one or the two or wherever it was. That was a low effort play from him, and that goes in there. I think there's 1:20 left at that point. You've got three timeouts. You can get the ball back with decent amount of time on the clock, and you can make something out of that. And it was, you know, it was disappointing, because again, it just felt like the team, some of them had given up at this point.
It was
a shame. It was a bad play. All the other tight ends would have gone over there. He let himself get pushed out. I don't know how it wasn't. I was convinced it was a touchdown when he went through, but if you just, you know, take a little stutter step, come inside, don't go for the damn pylon when there's two guys trying to push you out. You know, if you're going to highlight individual plays, that's a big one. You should have scored there.
The only thing I have about that is that in the huddle, they're going to be emphasizing the need with sideline stuff to preserve clock and get out of bounds. I hear what you're saying.
When you're at the 1 yard line, there's a little bit of a difference there.
Yeah, I agree. I'm just saying what I think they'd have been saying in the huddle, though. Yeah. I don't know. It was he stepped out, I think, even before he got hit. It's just like kind of clumsy, slightly.
Yeah. Like I said, if that was one of our better playmakers, that's a touchdown. It's just little things, you know, like that might have saved us the time. It meant we wouldn't have had to burn the time out, for one. Like, we wouldn't have had the delays. We wouldn't have had just a minute left. I know it's only little bits, but, you know, if we get the ball back with 35, 40 seconds and we need a field goal to tie up, I trust Jared Goff to go and do that drive, especially with us and how we play in the two-minute drills. I trust us to go get that. Give you an opportunity to do so. That's what I mean. It's just at the end, it just felt forlorn. Like, we didn't seriously think we were going to get back into it. So, I mean, it was great. Great catch from J-Mo, though, and like J-Mo's just going to be amazing next year. Like, he's fully integrated into this system now, and if it is Goff who's still under center next year, kid's going to go crazy. But it was just really disappointing in the end.
Any other thoughts from the rest of you guys about the end of the game?
The 49ers, they let us score. They went to total prevent defense, That coverage was just soft. We were just dinking and dunking, and they were happy. There was no one near Gibbs or Laporta every time we passed like 8 or 9 yards. They weren't even asked. Brought us down yardage. Like I said, they did not even fear us at the end. They thought the job were done. Like I said, they were just going to let us burn the clock. The clock management was great. And then it's pretty hilarious. Like, what was it, like 3rd and 3? Dibbert got to be nine formation, like 6 yards from line of scrimmage. And you know he wants to run up the middle. Like, you know that play was stupid. It were never going to work. They literally put every man and his dog in the middle. So we ran it fucking straight at him. And they had to burn time out. That was a stupid play call. Like I say, it was just never going to succeed. It was just so blatantly obvious. And yeah, Jamo made a great catch. Like you say, he landed up on his knee. But yeah, like I say, onside kick. I liked the style. Yeah, Reynolds got there with like 2 yards too early, tiptoe, I might say. Even if it caught it, it wouldn't have stood. So. And we were 0-3. No, everyone knew we weren't going to convert the onside kick. And converting onside kick in years, I'm pretty sure it is. It wasn't going to happen, like I say. So.
I'm still waiting to see the pelters onside kick where you just hammer it at a down lineman, hoping it rebounds to you. Because it feels like that's the easiest way to do it.
I feel like our last successful onside kick, didn't we get one against San Fran in Dan's first game?
Yes. Yes, we had to get two and we got the first one and we almost got the second one.
I feel like that might have been our last one. So, I don't know.
Yeah, the Rams that season as well, I'll look. Give me a sec.
Oh, did we do one on the Rams? No. I thought it was fake punt. We did two fake punts on the Rams, didn't we?
Just quickly, many thanks to Muxperiment on Twitch, who has tipped $20, who has said, "This was my favourite season of Lions fandom. Love the team. Happy they had a successful season and appreciate Royal Lions UK contributions to it all." Thank you, Muxperiment. Appreciate you very much.
But ultimately, I think in the end, we deserve to lose because we took our foot off the gas. We got complacent against a team that if you give them chances, they'll punish you. And they punched us in the mouth, I'd say. So, in the end, yeah, it played out how I thought it was going, unfortunately. So, like, you can't win a game in half of football, but you can lose one. And we kind of showed that, unfortunately.
I want to feel like we witnessed the last iteration of, like, the growth, like, the growing pains of a team. Like, you know, all along the way, we've had, you know, first we had trouble just winning games. Then we had a really slow start last year, but then we started winning games, but then we kind of choked when we could have got to the playoffs. And then this year, you know, this is what growth does for this. Again, this is what young teams do. It's silly errors, like silly errors. Nothing the coaches did. It's like 90% on the players. This is because they made some stupid errors and young guys do that. Even Amara was dropping passes in the end, which isn't him, because the amount of pressure on you when you're on the road, you're at Levi, their crowd got loud late on, and the game has, for an entire half, been going against you. Like, those are the mental moments that, you know, they'll forge and make you stronger in the long run, but in the short run, they can cost you a game like that. And this team has been one that it has literally built with the definition of youth. It's hit every hurdle possible. And fallen, but then it's got back up again afterwards. And I think this is maybe the last one. Like, if they get back here again pretty soon, this will serve them well. And I wouldn't expect us to screw up on that level again. I think, you know, the team who gets us then will be in a lot of bother.
And some players had a great game. Laporte had a very strong game again. You know, obviously Jameson had a, you know, a fantastic game. You know, I think just came down to people like, you know, the cornerbacks basically let us down majorly in this game. So, you know, I think it's on defense, in all honesty, this loss, if anything. Personally, that's my view on it. But
the offensive
when you're looking now, look back at it, feels like a fucking miracle.
Yeah.
How has this duck hit cornerback group full of fucking scrub got us this far? This offense has dragged their asses kicking and screaming most of the season. My number one thought this morning was, I've spent all year about, oh God, the coach is going to leave. I woke up this morning and thought, actually, I don't care which coaches leave. I think I want some fresh ideas with the young core talent we've got. I'm not worried about who leaves. If Ben goes, fair enough. If Glenn goes, I'm fucking up. I don't give a shit. Give me them compensation picks. I don't care. Like, I know that he's not the talent to work with, but I also just kind of want to see the back of him now. I just want to start fresh. Players, but also, yeah, some coaches.
That's it. You've got to keep evolving. Like, good teams just carry on over. They don't sit on the laurels and sit where they are. They just keep evolving. And it just feels like this is a little bit of what this team needs. But, like, it needs to keep that offensive line together and hang with it. Like, they played like a Super Bowl-caliber offensive line yesterday. Like, that is the type of group that wins you a Super Bowl, especially in the first half, the way they were. They were champions. Like, Frank has more injuries than you can list, and he's still one of the best players on the day. Like, just consistently again and again and again. Panay is, like, I think you can even say he's better than, like, he's Trent Williams level now. Like, he is utter Trent Williams level right now. And the scary part is he's not even reached his ceiling yet. He's on the way to his ceiling. Like, Trent Williams will look ordinary by the time Panay's done. So you got to keep that unit
together.
Panay's
the best offensive tackle in the NFL, like, for me. Like, he scored, his PFF grade was 92.2 against the best, you know, one of the best defensive front lines in San Francisco. And he just dominated them. Like, he was just launching his blockers around the field. Yeah. It was men against boys.
And athleticism is freaky.
Yep. And to prove that point, because obviously it was he also played Trent's grade 2 points lower, 90.2 against a worse defensive line.
But it's that athleticism that separates him. Like, when he's pulling, when he's at the... He's so goddamn quick. I bet he's quicker than a few receivers in this league. Like, the way he runs, he just is absolutely amazing.
I'd back Saul in a race against Quintez Cephas.
Hey, why are you doing Quintez dirty like that?
Because he wasn't that fast.
Yesterday,
when he reported as eligible, he got open, and he was like, I think it was a fourth down try, I could be wrong, and he was open like all day long again. And he actually looked annoyed that he didn't get the ball thrown to him. So he is a super special player. He's, in all honesty, if you have a favorite player on the Lions roster, for me, my favorite is definitely Penei Sewell.
Speaking of O-line, yesterday I decided, unpopular opinion, I'm going to pull Jonah's offer. I'm letting him walk. I'm not bothered about resigning him now. I think we can plug someone in. We didn't look like we missed him, if I'm completely honest. And I think we need to spend that money in a better area.
I guess it depends what the offer is.
He's not coming back, I don't think.
It depends. Well, I'm going to play a little game with Matt because it's something that we referenced. Can you guess what Karadi Arashika's PFF grade was?
I'm looking at it at the moment, so it's not damn much it. Of a game. Sorry.
But, yeah. But six. He gave up six.
I didn't notice him.
He gave up six pressures, supposedly, so five hurries and a QB hit, which is not too bad, considering that there's another player on the team who got a 4.0 pass blocking grade somehow. Our favourite tall ginger guy, but he was the... he's the weak link. Like, looking at everyone else, Decker gave up three. Glasgow gave up three. Frank gave
that's
up two.
PFF can go eat crow. They just screw him. He looked really good.
He did look good.
This is his first, like, proper, well, like, first full start. He's like, he's in an NFC championship game. He's only just been drafted. Oh, and he was there last week. But, you know, he's had to come in after being cold for a lot of the season. He's doing a very good job.
He started against Buffalo last year.
No, I mean this year. Like, he's been sat on the bench a lot. Yeah. He has not been playing much football. And for him to come in and for them to dominate the way they did, you know...
He started against Tampa, against Raiders, and he started at right guard against at Chicago in week 14. So this is his fourth start of the season. But yeah, he looked good in relief, but...
He would have been cold, though, because all of those came about a month and a half ago, though. Like, Jonah's been back a little while. I know what Ant's saying.
Yeah, man. The kid's basically like snot, buggers and chewing gum. That's also holding him together. Like, the guy's a liability. He's not... I am not giving him, like, top 10, 15 guard money. He ain't worth it.
I mean, he's had one dicky year with injury, like out of his entire rookie deal. So he's been healthy for the vast majority. Like he's every year he's going down crocked. It's just been unfortunate. It's been this one.
The thing about the theory of offensive line, and we can get into this in terms of when we're talking roster after this, but like, you can't pay all five offensive linemen pretty much ever, because then you can't pay the rest of your team. They command too much money to do that. So you do have to pick and choose where you pay. And for myself, I've always been a fan of pay the center because they set the tone, call the protections, and the snap is all important. And pay your tackles because they're dealing with the edge rushers. And you live with your interior guys, the guards. You just go, I hope this works. Fingers crossed. And we've not done that. And it's worked well for us, but, you know, Jonah is on a rookie deal and Graham is on a cheap deal. And if Graham can come back, great. And if we can draft a guy to replace Jonah, fine. I, on the basis of his play and his injury history in his entire contract with Jonah, in a vacuum, I'd pay him. But we're not in a vacuum. And I think that's the problem. Like, if you want to pay Saul, and you're going to continue to pay Decker, and maybe that's the answer. Maybe don't continue to pay Decker, but that's not how I see offensive line. I want to continue to pay Decker. I think Decker's had one of the best glow-ups towards the end of the season, actually, this year, because he was poor the first half of the year, I think, and he's really come into his own, where he's like the stronger part of this offensive line. Continue to pay Decker, pay Saul, pay Frank. It doesn't leave much else for the rest of them. That's how I see it, but... I thought KOD gave up less pressures in a full game today than he did in relief in half a game last week.
Yeah.
That's what I'll say. I know that PFF is PFF, but I will say that metric at least says he did much better against a really good offensive line in terms of interior pressure. So, yeah. Cigars and subpars, people. There's quite a few of us, so maybe one each as we go around the circle. And starting with Steve. Who do you want to give a shout out or a call out to?
Penei Sewell.
Penei Sewell with the cigar. Anyone for a subpar?
CJ Gardner-Johnson. And his PFF grade was crap as well, like 33 or something. But yeah, like don't talk the talk if you can't produce on the field. And he didn't. He missed loads of tackles and generally looked crap.
Ryan McCluskey.
Jack Campbell gets the thumbs up. Super busy, like I say. He has come on leaps and bounds this year. And like I say, he was just busy. Coverage, he stunk. I've seen the grade. It was bad in coverage. I'm pretty sure he had like a 40% coverage grade or something. It was somewhere that wasn't good. But tackling in the box, he made CMC's life hell all day, the majority of it, and which I'm fine with. The other one, honestly, I could hand out like a full 20 pack of B and edges to the guys that blowed, so we don't have time for that. But yeah, Kirby, I thought Kirby were bad.
And
I think he's been bad in a couple of recent weeks, actually. I think his tackling has got worse in recent weeks.
And
you know, screw it. I'll give the love to Malcolm. I think we didn't miss Barnes. I thought he came in, and again, the amount of football he's played, he came in and made some big impactful plays for us, and he didn't miss a beat in there. I thought he was incredibly good, given the circumstances. I wanted to give downs on days like this, but I don't know. Where would I go? It'd be Reynolds. I'm sorry, Josh. I'm disappointed in you. Like, I really am. We've given you an opportunity here, a very big one, and when we needed you most, you let us down. So, yeah, it was not a good day.
Ryan Farden.
Well, cigar is would be for Jameson Williams. And I'd have to agree with Ant, with Reynolds. You know, big moments. He let us down, unfortunately. He had one of his worst games of the season. And that might be enough not to see him back next year, because I think they'll definitely be looking to upgrade on him in the off-season.
Ashley Soden.
This is going to cause controversy because my cigar's Kirby, for the exact reason that Ryan just pointed out. He's actually tackling's got better. I think he wrapped up really damn well on some of those run plays where he's spread the run and he came forward and got CMC near close to the line. 5 weeks ago, that wouldn't have happened. He was tackling way off the line. Looking now, his average, his run stop, yeah, he's had run stop in basically 4 of the 5 past weeks when he's basically had that many the rest of the season beforehand. It came to nut up and shut up time. He's really improved at that and took over from CJGJ as that sort of two-shell guy. So for me, Kirby's my thing. Yeah, he's gave up a couple of big plays as he's done, but he's really improved on the thing he needed to when I scouted him. And then the my subpar might be still in your guy, Matt, but Jake McQuaid, snaps weren't good. So we've got to highlight that. Long Snappers Watch 2024 has already begun if you're in our Discord.
I mean, Jack Fox had a hell of a day holding the ball, I will say that. My cigar goes to Alex Anzalone. I especially in the first half when the defense was doing fantastic stuff, he really led the team in that. And then when the rest of the jigsaw was like kind of, jigsaw is not what I wanted to say, when the rest of the, what's the bloody wooden tower game? Jenga. When the Jenga tower was kind of falling down, he kind of stood tall. I didn't see him put any feet wrong. I didn't see him with loose tackling, letting people fall forwards. I kind of felt like that was everyone else around him. I thought that was one of his better games in a season where he's been really good, apart from when he got injured and dinged up a little bit halfway through. But started the season on an absolute tear, and I think he finished it really well. And, I mean, we've hammered him for the last 5 weeks, so it kind of feels like I'm jumping on it a little bit. In fact, no, screw it. Screw it. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that, Cam Sutton. I'm going to Aiden Hutchinson for my subpar. And I get it. You were put in a hole by going up against Trent Williams on the right-hand side when you majority go up on the left-hand side the majority of the time. They reversed it and put him up against the best. And I think no?
I looked at it because it was the wrong thing. You can see me tracking. We did it in the first quarter. And then for the rest, it's not. He actually played 55 snaps. 40 were against McKivitz on right tackle. The rest were against Williams.
So we identified before the game, Aiden Hutchinson needs to have a big day for us to win this game. He's going up against a weak right tackle. All the 49ers guys that we talked to said, we're really scared of this matchup. Where were you? All game. Not when we were playing well, he was anonymous. When we were playing badly, he was totally just disappeared. And I don't think he was a liability or anything. He was just a complete non-factor either way. You were average. And you are a remarkable player. And you need to be.
What was his PFF grade?
53.7.
Yeah, not good.
The same as you said. James Houston shouldn't have played this game. One redder. He should not. He shouldn't have been activated.
He didn't look right, did he?
He didn't look right. He wasn't ready. Frankly, he was a waste of a roster space. I'd have probably stick some pleb like Charles or Romeo there. They'd have done just as little, to be honest. Like I said, but at least they'd have probably looked fitter. He looked like the Tin Man.
The fact that Romeo played pretty much the exact same amount of snaps, and yet and that's how anonymous he must have been. Like, I saw him once, and unfortunately,
I didn't even know he played. Like,
he missed one tackle. The one thing I remember is him missing the tackle in the Purdy scramble.
The thing that's sad is, like, I'm so sad that Tracy Walker's career in the Lions is going to end with, like, 3 healthy scratches. That feels sad. I don't know, we get like $8 million saving in cutting, and I'm going to cut him because, well, I think he's a bit, well, leadership, a bit of a wet wipe, and he's hurt. But it felt bad. It felt the wrong way to do things.
The biggest victim of the Melifonwu glow up. I mean, yeah. Many thanks to Ken Stouder for
he barely saw the field as well.
To Ken Stouder with a $20 super chat saying, I thought we had it in halftime. Oops. Thanks for your podcast and all your efforts, Raw. Thank you, Ken. Much appreciated, mate. We are going to. Oh, well, actually, no, let's talk AFC Championship game very, very briefly. Baltimore go in at home, favoured by a few points against Pat Mahomes. Best defence in the NFL. MVP likely in Lamar Jackson. And boys, we threw it away. They didn't have a chance.
The AFC, for as much as it's told us how much it's better than the NFC and that, it's one really good team and a big ass bunch of chokers in there. Bills, chokers, Ravens, chokers. Like, we say there's lots of good teams in there, but there's a lot. Like, this is our first year trying to compete. Some of these teams have been trying to do it for years now, and every year they come up short, and it's just the Chiefs. The Chiefs, the Chiefs, the Chiefs. They've had to go two road games, and they've just gone and made a mockery of some of what meant to be the best teams in the AFC, and they've just sort of done away with them. It's one good team and a bunch of mediocre bottle jobs. I don't think it's no better than the NFC, and it was a terrible game. Like, how can you not score any points in the second half of a game and win and go to the Super Bowl? Like us, we scored 31 and we're not going to a Super Bowl. They didn't have to score a goddamn one in the second half. It's crazy.
And like George Karlaftis, the glow up he's had this year. Like, he was a useless rookie this year. The guy has been a monster. Him, Chris Jones, and Drew Tranquil, they dominated that game. He has been a phenomenal free agent signing. Like I say, Andy knows how to build a roster. Some fantastic signings every year. Lamar could get nothing going. And yeah, he's passing again. Questionable at times. Like I say, even when he was protected. So yeah, the Chiefs, don't they? They can look bang average and sloppy through mid-season, but when shit's about to hit the fan, like, they know what they're doing. Chiefs are winning a Super Bowl for me.
At the end of the day, the biggest difference between the two teams was playoff Kelce showed up in the first half, and that was the game.
Yeah.
Like,
I hate him. I can't stand the geezer, but I can't also say he's probably not the best, maybe the tight end of all time. To pass Jerry Rice's playoff record for receptions, a tight end, that's mental. But yeah. What a tight end does in the modern game to what a tight end did when Jerry Rice played, worlds apart. Back then, you weren't a big name tight end when Jerry Rice was catching balls. You were a blocker and you fucking liked it. Shut up. No. For most part. And now these days, though, like, he just takes over. Like, yeah. Shout out to Jerry Sneed. The guy got dunked on, and then he dunked on Zay Flowers. Caught him now, you little bitch. Crying on the sideline, waving your little bloody finger. Fucking pipe down. Your plan.
I just want like a proper Scotsman to go up to Kelce, take his helmet off, and Glasgow kiss that smug ass smile off his face. I cannot stand him at all. The Kelce Swift monster needs to die. And it's just like, he's a veteran. He wound up the Ravens something perfect, didn't he? Just all these little things to get them wound up. It was like the Ravens thought they were in the Royal Rumble, which happened the night before. There was a proper good clothesline in there. There were a few suplexes, stupid penalties. It's like, no, you're not in the WWE, you're in the NFL. But Kelce, I can stand him. He just does my numbing. Yeah. It's like he's a stain to his brother. I love his brother. He's got all the knob of the family in him, whereas Jason is just lovable and friendly.
Yeah. Well, shout out to the Ravens that actually did play well, one of whom is a kind of friend of the podcast because we all loved him in the draft process, Cole Hamilton, showing why he's an absolute beast.
He was huge.
I stand by it. I know my first article for this podcast was why we should draft him over from 2 overall. Didn't age too well because Hutchinson's been good, but damn, he's a damn good safety. And then someone who, if the Ravens don't start to lock him up to a contract, we need to sign him and put him next to Hutch, because him and McNeil, damn of an interior, Justin Madueke, what a glow up he's had this season. That dude, if he comes available, sign him. Just tap the credit card on the table. Get him, because him and Aleem would be an elite interior duo. We saw with the Rams, Kobe Turner and Aaron Donald, we kept them kind of quiet against us. Good interior duo. Vita Vey and Clyde Jacansi, good interior duo. Eric Armstead and Hardgrave, good interior duo. Get them next to Hutch. It'll take so much pressure off his weight, his shoulders, and he can hopefully just pin his ear back and get to the quarterback.
Just want to give a shout out to Joshua Mercer 7 in Twitch, cheering with 100 bits, and says, I hate Mahomes and Travis Kelce, but I really want them to snatch souls from 49ers fans after interacting with some of them yesterday at the game. Lol, Joshua was at the game at Levi's Stadium, I know. And I don't believe that the Lions fans had the best away day experience. I mean, you expect a hostile atmosphere in this level of the playoffs. But Ryan, you went to two of the three playoff games. How was your experience with the fans? I mean, I know obviously you were at Ford Field for both, but, you know, what was it like?
Well, you didn't even see an away fan at both of those games anyway. So it was just completely and utterly Lions fans everywhere. But it was very special because, you know, everyone had waited so long for it. And, you know, it was just so loud in there. I mean, it was really, really loud. And as you expect it to be. But it was just wonderful to see the whole city celebrate with one another after getting, you know, a long-awaited home playoff win. But I definitely back up that 49ers comment, by the way, about their fans. I've been there as well. They are pure trash. So, yeah, that's not a nice place to go to. So I definitely say he's not lying there, that's for sure.
Right, that is going to do it for us there. A sad podcast for us, but we will be back, as we have talked about. The off-season starts right here. Super Bowl preview coming up this time next week. There is now no Thursday podcasts for the off-season as it is now, so go to once a week on the main show. College pods will continue, I think, at least for some time. I know that at some point we tend to amalgamate them, but I don't think that time is yet. Obviously, we need to discuss it. But watch this space, and the schedule obviously will go up on YouTube for what we're going to do. So
I've just had a text come in, Matt, and it's from Travis Kelsey. And he says, Ryan McCluskey, absolute nobber, is like West Yorkshire Wazzock. And he said, and that Fitzpatrick's a dickhead too. So that's just come in on text. It's weird that, isn't it? Coincidence.
You're laughing now, Kelsey, but wait till some Timothy Chalamet lookalike is piping Taylor Swift after she's done with it.
Jesus!
I can't wait to hear the breakup song for Travis Kelsey. That's all I'm saying. Oh, God. Steve, what an imagination you have.
It just came in there on text. It was just coincidence. I was just reading it out.
Well, the Chalamet thing as well came in. Right, let's sign off with some degree of respect left. Super Bowl preview Monday. Shrine Bowl happened last week for the guys in terms of the preview. Senior Bowl this week, and then obviously potentially the fallout from both of those games next week on the college show. After the Super Bowl is done, we're going to do our award show at some point. We need you guys to get involved with that. There's suggestions that we need that we'll have forgotten about that you guys will remember. It's not just, you know, comeback player of the year, MVP, all that sort of stuff, but it's also stuff like moment of the year. And there's been so many that we need suggestions for that. So I will put up some posts on Twitter. Please interact with that as highly as you can. I'll put some posts on the YouTube community and in Discord as well. Come and join us on Discord. We'd love to chat with you through the off-season. And then we're going to warm up to the draft, something rotten. We're going to do what we've always done in terms of trying to profile exactly what the Lions need and then having those needs in depth in this draft. So you won't need to go anywhere else for some fantastic draft content. And then, of course, hopefully you're going since it's in Detroit, and maybe we see you there over a beer. I think that sounds lovely. Guys, it's been a terrific season. Obviously, we're going to break it down sometime after the Super Bowl, but reigning division champs, playoff winners, and a visit to the championship game. It's been a hell of a season. Thank you for all of your efforts all the way through it in terms of all the research and the content that you've put together. I think it's been a fantastic year for the show. And obviously we'll get into that more in the off season. To the viewers, to the listeners, you make it worthwhile with all your interactions and all your comments and the humor that you bring. It's been fantastic. And hopefully you enjoy what we bring for the off season, and we'll see you for the college show later on in the week. Boys, a pleasure. We'll be back. Let's go, Lions, One Pride.
One Pride.